Welcome to episode 29 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Adam.
I'm Mark.
And on today's podcast, we're going to be reviewing the new film Everest. We're also going to be rewatching the Adam Sandler classic, Jack and Jill. We're going to talk about our top three one-hit wonders. So that's actors, directors, writers who had one successful piece of work and have either done nothing else since or everything else they've done is garbage. We're going to be skipping back in time to 2001. And we're going to be giving away a very, very, very cool prize. Isn't that right, lads?
Incredibly cool.
I want to win it.
I want to win it. I don't want to give it away. Can we just have it?
No. Why not? That's the truth coming out. We'll give it away.
Sorry, guys. We can't have it.
Before we launch into the show, though, I just wanted to do a bit of housekeeping. We, this week, were featured on a website. There's a website out there called avclub.com. And it's a great entertainment and pop culture website with news, reviews, features, etc. It's a site that I and the guys have been reading for years. And they do a weekly feature on a Monday called Podmas, where they talk about their favourite podcasts of the week. And they named us as one of them.
They named our room
special.
The power of Tommy.
That is the power of Tommy. That's the sort of cachet you get from working with Tommy Wiseau, isn't it?
There's exactly. Some interesting boxes, Mark, you're wearing there.
I've got my Tommy Wiseau boxes on.
Can you put on Instagram a shot of your Tommy Wiseau boxes?
As long as I haven't got an erection, yeah. Yeah, otherwise I'll be banned.
So we just wanted to say thank you to the guys at AV Club. Check out avclub.com, go to skiptotheend.co.uk and listen to our Tommy Wiseau room special and all of our other episodes. So that being said, let's get started.
I set the topic last week then, lads.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a simple one. Not really a simple one at all, was
bloody,
it?
Bloody difficult,
it
in
was,
fact.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Your top three one-hit wonders. So this could be a... And it's quite varied. This could be a director, writer, actor, actress. It could even be a production company, anything that should have one good piece of work, and that's that.
Like makeup artist.
Makeup artist. Mm-hmm. It could be anything. If they've made someone look like, like John Travolta in Battlefield Earth... as their finest piece of work. Yeah. But no, anything that's... They've had kind of one good piece of work and then either disappeared into the night or everything else they've done is absolute garbage. I'm very curious now to hear your answers. So I'm going to go to Mark first. Come on.
It's going to be an actress to start with. Very young actress. Linda Blair for The Exorcist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know actually if she did physically have an exorcist come and she got completely possessed because we haven't seen it on screen since then. She was only 14 at the time. One of my favourite horror movies ever made.
Okay.
Absolutely harrowing. It is, though. Yeah. Very scary. And she was actually nominated for an Oscar for this. For some reason, she must have decided not to bother with acting anymore because we've not seen anything.
Too much hassle.
Yeah. And it was a hell of a performance and she probably just thought, I can't top this, so I'll go out looking at the lights. I don't know. Not sure, but we haven't seen her.
Hard work going through all these award ceremonies, I assume.
Is it a case that she never did anything else at all? Or is it a case that she just didn't do anything of worth? Because I've never really followed her career, to
me
be honest.
Me neither.
I think she didn't do anything ever again. Mm. And even now when you watch that film, you just think to yourself, how the fuck did you put a 14-year-old through that?
Yeah.
It's not nice. And
maybe that was it. Maybe she was just so mentally traumatised by the whole thing.
Your mother sucks cocks in hell.
It's absolutely disgusting. And that was one of those films where... people did pass out in the cinema. It's not like nowadays when you get, whatever these stupid horrors are coming out every week where it's like Insidious 3, the film that people spew up in the cinema and die. It's like, no, it's bullshit. But back then, it was the first time when people were kicking off and there's ambulances waiting outside. And it is horrible. And, I think there was a lot of religious groups standing outside the cinema protesting. And it was a really, really controversial movie, but
it was at the time.
It stands its ground. It still looks
about
brilliant now.
It is funny then if she's gone on not to do anything that her name still exists in popular consciousness. Like when you said Linda Blair, I still know that name. Whereas I wouldn't know the name of the kid who was Damien in The Omen. You probably do, Mark, being a horror fan.
Yeah, it's true. He has done other stuff. But no, literally, she did Exorcist 2, which was wank and doesn't count. And she did like these silly little terrible horrors that you'd see in Pound Shop, stuff like Hell Night and stuff like that. But there was no big films. It wasn't these ones where you thought this person's going to have a really big career. You know, like the kid from Sixth Sense. Look how he's gone off and done stuff.
But... I'm sorry, Mark. I'm going to have to stop you here because me and Ben are big fans of Hell Night.
Yeah, me and Adam get together most weekends
and watch Hell Night, you know.
Yeah, it's just
and we have a hell of a night.
We do.
Dreadful.
And you've spoiled the rewatch for today now.
But this was a film that was a masterpiece in horror. Still, people now walk around and say it's one of the films that inspired many others.
Yeah.
And fair play to her. She deserved the Oscar nomination at 14, which not many young people get Oscar nominations now at that age, do you?
Some do, yeah.
Not many.
Yeah. Well, that lass who got one for, was it Beast of the Southern Wild?
Covenjine Wallace. Yeah, she's a little one.
Yeah, she's done a few cameos. I know about that. I think she was in Scream as a cameo, but nothing serious. So that's my first choice.
Yeah, that's a good choice. Go on then, Ben. What's your number one?
I'm going to go for Gary Oldman. And stop before you start thinking, hold on, he's been in loads
Look
of stuff.
Look at those eyes.
I mean, Gary Oldman as a writer-director.
Nice.
He wrote and directed Nil by Mouth, a film that is the definition of gritty, about an East End family in London. It's an utterly, utterly brutal film, which I think holds the record for the most uses of the F word in a film. and it's, up until this point, it's the only thing that Gary Oldman has written and directed. And it was, you know, the critics loved it. I think it did quite well at the box office in England. And it's amazing that he hasn't done anything. But when I was looking at this, it turns out that he's actually got another film coming out next year. I think he did Nil by Mouth in 1997. He's got a film coming out next year called Flying Horse, starring Benedict Cumberbatch. So it's taken him a while. You know, it's taken him very nearly 20 years to do something else. But
it could well be then that he's not a one-hit wonder after all.
Well, I mean, yeah, we might have to revisit this in a year when Flying Horse comes out. But I think as far as writing and directing a film goes, it's a pretty good hit to have.
It's odd that someone like him moved into that side of the camera.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do more.
Yeah, I think it was because it was a passion project. You know, he wrote this based on his own experiences of growing up in the East End and his family life and the lives of families that lived sort of in his area. So it was resonant to him. It meant something. It wasn't just he wanted to get into directing. He did this because it mattered. If he wanted to just get into directing, I'm sure many studios would have given him many projects, but it wasn't about that. He wanted to just make this one film, so he hasn't done anything since, until Flying Horse.
That's quite impressive. Mm.
So Gary Oldman is my first pick.
Quite looking forward to that now, then.
Yeah.
I'm quite looking forward to seeing that film that you're actually talking about, because I've not seen
it. Have you never seen Nil by Mouth?
No.
Dude.
I know, it's everyone's sort of, it's on the list.
Ray Winston is so good in that film.
Yeah. I'll watch it.
Just unbelievable. It's so powerful.
Is he playing an East End thug character?
He does play an East End thug. It's weird that you'd say that, because it's not as if he's typecast for that or anything.
No, I mean, I've seen a film where he plays Scrooge, but it's kind of a gangster East End version of this, because it's a bit different to what he normally does.
I liked him in The Departed, where he was a Boston gangster that had something of an East End accent.
I like him on adverts now, just plugging Paddy Power and stuff. I think that's pretty good.
In that East End thug way, he's
doing really well. You better bloody put a bet on now.
Other betting shops are available.
Yeah, let's get some endorsements from Paddy Power. Everyone else does. Adam, it's your topic. You've probably thought about this more.
No, not at all. No, my first one I'm going to go for is actually someone who's probably quite well known to us all.
Yeah.
And it's the only good performance I think she's put in. And it's Lindsay Lohan from Mean Girls.
Oh, see, this speaks volumes about me, but I rather like Freaky Friday. And I think she's great in it. So I won't count that her as the one hit wonder. I'll have to argue with you.
No, I'm sorry. Everything else she's done has been absolute toss.
Herbie Goes Bananas.
Whereas Mean Girls is an absolute classic.
It is.
I mean, I don't know anyone who's seen it that doesn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
It's got that right blend of... It's Tina Fey.
It was written by Tina Fey, yeah.
And she actually plays the principal or teacher
in
it as well. Absolutely fantastic. Lindsay Lohan even puts in a great performance, regardless of Freaky Friday, man. I know you're a big fan from the sounds of things. But no, I'm a big fan of this film, and this performance from her is great as well.
I really like... Is it Rachel McAdams in that?
Yeah.
As the bitch, the mega bitch.
Mm-hmm.
But she puts a good performance in everything, doesn't she, Rachel?
Yeah.
She does. And she's officially going to be in Doctor Strange now.
Oh, is she?
She's officially
Fantastic.
Signed up, yeah.
So, I mean, that's my number one anyway. Well, not number
that's
one,
your number one?
My first.
not bothering with three and two.
That's true. That's it.
I've only got one.
Right, I'll follow. Some people won't agree, but I'm going with it. Is it Michael Gondry? Is that how you pronounce his surname?
I think it's Michelle, isn't it?
Oh, well.
It's a blood, it's a fella, it but he's French, so it's like Michel Gondry. But yeah.
For Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. So he's famous before this for doing a lot of music videos, very mm-hmm. famous like White Stripes, and there's some really cool music videos, I think, for Beck and Beastie Boys and stuff. Mm-hmm. But as far as films go, I absolutely hate this film, Be Kind, Rewind. I thought that was a joke film. I can't take that seriously in any way.
Is Jack Black in that?
Yep.
Is he playing a fat, funny, kind of weird character?
Bit out there, bit wacky. Yeah, yeah, he's a bell end. And then also, I'm sure you both had to put yourself through this, but the Green Hornet film.
Oh, terrible. Terrible.
So for me, I really liked Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Seth Rogen in that?
He is.
Is he playing a bit of a sort of wacky...
over the top, out there, stoner? But no, I wouldn't shit on it if it was on fire.
Why would you shit on anything if it was on
fire? Not that would help put it out, but I wouldn't piss on it either. But I wouldn't take a shit at the same time.
So your way of putting out a fire...
One trick pony, yeah? One
trick pony. It's to drop trowel... and shit on it.
That must have been why he got kicked out of the fire brigade.
That's from my work experience. Mark, there's a fire. That's not done the job. But no, Eternal Sunshine, I think, is one of Jim Carrey's finest performances because he's not being a dickhead. He's just over the top, silly humour.
Mugging and pulling faces. Yeah.
And he's very good in it. And mm-hmm. it's quite a depressing film that you don't want to watch many times because it really will question, you'll have a lot of questions after you watch it. And it makes you not want to be in a relationship, but it's a really well-made film, and Jim Carrey is very good in it.
Yeah.
And what's Frodo's real name?
Elijah Wood.
Elijah Wood.
Said it earlier.
Yeah, he's very good. He's very good in it, and he's believable. And mm-hmm. I really like Kate Winslet.
Well done.
She's beautiful in that film.
Yeah.
But again, the chemistry works. It's really well filmed, and I don't know how you can fuck up so many times again. It's not like he just made one film afterwards. Be Kind and Rewind is the worst piece of shit I've seen.
It is rubbish.
Talking about shit films, stay around for our rewatch. You never know, we might not like that either. But it was utterly bollocks.
Yeah.
And Jack Black's a twat. I'm saying it now.
You've said it before.
And I want him dead. There we go.
It's been a while. All right, well, on a very similar tack, my director is another director who came from the music video world, had one big film, and I don't think he's actually done anything since, or he might have done a couple of garbage films, and it's Tony Kaye, who directed American History X. You got that as well?
Yeah, he's on my list as well.
Which is a fantastic film. I think we've talked about how much we love American History X in the past. It's a brilliant film, that he hates, because it was kind of the final cut was taken away from him by Ed Norton and the studio. Yeah. So the film that we've seen, how much of that is truly his, I don't know, and I wouldn't like to hasten a guess, but I'm still counting it as his film.
Yeah, same.
And it's the only thing he's done of any worth. I think he's done a couple of sort of B-movies since, but nothing special.
I was reading up on him, and he's done a few projects afterwards that didn't get any kind of critical, even viewing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no one really looked at them.
Yeah.
He got no press, nothing. But he's just kind of twiddled off into obscurity.
Yeah, he's just disappeared, hasn't he? Yeah. Pretty much.
It's pretty much one good film, and I'm done.
Yeah, and it's a shame that maybe that experience soured him so much on big filmmaking that he's done very little since and not tried to get anything big off the ground again.
And it's odd because I think, if I remember correctly reading, he actually tried to petition the studio to get his name removed from the film.
Yeah.
So it's like you say, whether that is anything like the film he set out to mm-hmm. make, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, his name's on the bill, director, him, yeah.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, it's his for the most part, and it's a great,
it's a
great
one-hit wonder.
Yeah.
He made a film in 2012, Helming Detachment, which made less than $1 million.
Yeah, was it?
That's how bad it was.
What's it called? Detachment?
Yeah.
Is that the one with Adrian Brody?
I think it is. What, you've seen it?
I think I've heard of it. If it's
I don't
the
think
one
anyone's
I'm,
seen
the one
it.
I'm thinking
the one with Adrian Brody, I think. Yeah.
But yeah, his career's gone shy. And I love American History X. Yeah. I think it's absolutely stunningly made and so well directed.
But
those black and white scenes are literally, they'll stay with you. It's horrendous.
Oh, the curb stomp.
Oh, it's so bad. In the supermarket scene when they're pouring milk over it's literally disgusting.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's odd. It's like you say, I'm not sure whether the whole filmmaking experience soured him and he chose to leave Hollywood, that kind of world, or whether how difficult he was towards the end after the final cut. This made Hollywood kind of blacklist him.
This is the thing as well, because we're sort of saying, oh, it was hard for him. But from interviews I've read with him, it seems like he's not the easiest person to get along with. So it might be a bit of that as well. Yeah. It might be a bit of the fact that studios don't want to touch him rather than being the other way around. But yeah.
Maybe sticking him in with Edward Norton as well, who's known to be a complete dick. Having those both dicks going against each other. Allegedly. That can't be good.
Allegedly dicks.
Edward Furlong as well. So good in that film.
Yeah, really good.
I nearly had him in the one-hit wonders, but then I remember him in Terminator. He's a two-hit wonder.
Yeah.
So that's actually my number one. He was actually my number mm-hmm. one. So we'll carry on with Mark and we'll have one each.
I'm going to finish with an acting performance.
Yeah.
You have to help me again with the pronunciation of his name. I think it's...
Pronunciation is how you pronounce that word.
That's where we're going.
The irony.
I think it's Brandon Routh.
I think it's Routh. It's Routh. Pronounced Routh to rhyme with South.
For Superman Returns. Yeah. So I was one of the people that liked him as Superman. I thought he did a good job. And many people will say, oh, he's terrible, he's dreadful, because the film wasn't great. But I thought
isn't the point I'm going to argue with you on, but carry on.
I know what you're going to say. You're going to say Scott Pilgrim, aren't you?
And he's been, obviously, the Atom.
That's TV, though.
Yeah, I'm sticking with his film.
Yeah.
Acting career.
Okay, I think, well, he also, if you want to put it into... perspective, he was also in Zack and Miri Make a Porno.
Does that count as a negative one in the column? So that takes away.
He was dreadful in that. But in this, I really enjoyed him. Yeah. And I don't think he was that good in Scott Pilgrim. I thought he was all right. But
I think he's great in that.
Right. We're allowed to disagree. This is what
we
are. Yeah.
And we are disagreeing with you.
Good.
So relax.
But in this, he was
Cleaning lady on Monday.
He was very, very good. But after that, I've not seen him do anything decent, in my opinion.
And I thought he was a good Superman. It's just that film is terrible.
Yeah,
they brought him in to be a carbon copy of Christopher Reeve, and he did that. He was that all-American, you know, good-looking lad with the hair.
It wasn't his fault the film was boring.
No, it wasn't exactly. Not his fault that the film was absolute tripe and that he wasn't allowed to punch anyone.
No.
Didn't throw a single punch in the whole film.
No. Still would have preferred Nicolas Cage, but that's for another day.
Big time.
But that's my final choice. It was going to be... I'll wait till you've said yours, actually, because it was very tough to break
it down.
Tell it to
the on Monday.
She dusts.
But it's Friday, so she won't be in until Monday.
What's the line?
Great.
What is it Scott says back to me? He says something like, I dislike you, capiche? I'm going to go with an actor or an actress. Well, no, you say actor these days in the PC world, don't you? Not PC, not the shop where you buy computers from. I mean, the politically correct world.
I've been to PC world for a while.
I've gone with Linda Hamilton.
Okay.
So she's been in two Terminator films, but I'm counting the franchise as one hit.
You're saying the role itself.
The role itself, yeah. Now, she, you know, if we bring in TV into it, she was in Beauty and the Beast, and she was nominated for awards for that, but I'm not counting TV. I'm talking about films only. And she only really did the Terminator. She's done a hell of a lot of films. You go and look at her IMDb. She's got dozens upon dozens of credits, but nothing of any worth in the film world other than the Terminator. And she's so indelible in that. And when you think of the Terminator, you think of her as much as you think of Arnie. And that's why it was such a letdown that old Daenerys from Game of Thrones couldn't quite live up to her in Genesis. When I think of Linda Hamilton, I only think of the Terminator. I don't think of Beauty and the Beast, even though the Beast in Beauty and the Beast was the legendary Ron Perlman. So that was that was a stacked cast, but it was a terrible show.
Yeah,
it's an interesting choice. I mean, the only way I could disagree with you on it is the fact that it's in the same franchise and stuff like that. But they're two very different Sarah Connors.
Absolutely.
Two very different performances.
She's a hard ass in the second one, whereas she's sort of meek in the first. It is. But I look at them as a piece, as one franchise, one character.
Okay.
Yeah.
So my last choice then is a man called Thomas Shulman, who wrote Dead Poets Society.
Okay.
He actually won the screenplay, Best Screenplay Academy Award that year for it. But if you look at these credits, nothing really.
Really?
Nothing at all. He's done a few bits and pieces here. He worked with a few different actors, but nothing of any note, nothing really any good.
Yeah.
So Dead Poets Society, which is one of my favourite films, probably top 25 films, and one of Robin Williams' best performances, obviously brought in a young Ethan Hawke. It's one of the most moving films I've ever seen. And it's just, to write something like that was perfection, and then to go off and not really do anything... live up to anything since.
Is it based on a novel or anything? Is he like the novelist that has then converted his own novel into a screenplay?
I'm not sure if it is based on a novel, actually. I think he might have adapted a story to it, but there's still a certain amount of work that goes into that, you know, because you have to make those decisions of what you cut out and what you don't.
Yeah.
But
I'm not familiar with him.
To go on and do nothing really afterwards, it's very weird for a writer, especially.
And you say did you say you won the Oscar or was nominated?
Yes,
you
won it, I believe.
God, maybe you just thought that's it, done it now.
Yeah, they've achieved nothing more to achieve. Yeah. But it's odd, isn't it? Where because especially someone in the writing world, you don't really hear that a lot. Writers who go off and not really do anything afterwards.
No, not really. I mean, they'll at least write a few shit screenplays that turn into crap B movies.
This was one of the first ones that actually got picked up. His first ones that actually got picked up. He went and did a couple more.
Did you check to see if he's dead?
I was going to say, perhaps the last thing he wrote was his will. You know what I mean? That seems like, shocking, yeah, that would be it.
Last thing he wrote was a text on the motorway.
Well, when researching, I know he appeared at a film festival in 2014. So Dead Poets came out in, what, about 1980, late 80s,
late
80s early 90s?
Like that, yeah.
So, you know, he had a good few years in between to write something, if he is dead now. If he died yesterday, I'm really sorry about
it. And if he dies by the time this episode goes out...
Skip to the end, apologises to his family and friends.
And if you're not dead, fair play.
I'd say he's a great loss, but he hasn't done anything.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they're my choices. Really interesting topic.
Yeah, I like that. That took a lot of thought and a lot of digging, a lot of Googling.
I was sat here waiting for one of you to say, we have to say siblings now instead of brothers, don't we?
Yes.
You know who I'm going to say.
The Wachowskis, yeah.
And I really thought you were going to say that. I thought one of you guys were going to pull that out, because after The Matrix...
I thought Adam was going to have
for sure. Because obviously...
But they did Speed, V Vendetta.
No, but only produced,
but they only produced
it. They
that.
Didn't write. They didn't direct it. So I thought you were going to have them as director, because obviously Speed Racer was a masterpiece, so that might have been...
Plus, Cloud Atlas is it as well.
But again, you know, and you can't even say, well, Matrix counts as part two and three. Nah.
Maybe that's it. Like taking on Ben's theory of the franchise is the whole piece.
Yeah,
I can't say The Matrix is a good piece.
Fair enough. Yeah,
you've got a nice piece.
Cheers, mate. Thanks a lot.
We put it out to Twitter. We've had a few come back. We've got Benny Buckingham has said Simon West for Con Air.
Okay.
Yeah,
that was a fucking awesome film.
Love that film.
Brilliant film. This is one that I thought you were going to say. So Andrew Sinclair on Facebook, and I really thought you were going to say this, was Donnie Darko, Richard Kelly.
Yeah, but the thing is, I've got a certain amount of admiration for Southland Tales. It bombed at the box office.
I was going to say, Ben said before he's a fan of Southland Tales.
Yeah, I think we many, many moons ago on an early episode, I had it as
a guilty pleasure
movie. Yeah, so I dig that film. But it wasn't a hit, so I guess it is true that he's a one-hit wonder, but I love that film. Not love it, I like it in a way.
Andrew Summers on Facebook has put Requiem for a Dream. Clint Mansell.
Who wrote it?
Yeah.
Okay. And I think, I'm sure he is a novelist. I think he adapted that from his own novel, which sometimes is the case. You know, if you've only written one book and you're going to adapt it, what else are you going to adapt? So I don't think that's really his fault. If I'm thinking of the right guy, which I think I am.
Jane Denning put Cuba Gooding Jr. for Jerry Maguire. Is that the little kid?
No. That's the guy who won the Best Supporting Actor. You know, Cuba Gooding Jr. And then what was the next thing he did after that? It was some film where he's on a boat.
Snakes on a Boat?
No.
Pearl Harbor?
Was he in Pearl Harbor?
Yeah.
That definitely wasn't a hit.
He's much better.
Other than the planes hit.
He was actually quite good, though.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I did a god-awful film about a boat after that, a really bad comedy film.
Okay. Sarah Walters put Irvin Kershner for Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
Can't really argue.
Mm-hmm.
And Del, not Val Kilmer, which is at Del Kilmer, put, first one that springs to mind is Jeffrey Wright, who's the director of Romper Stomper.
Okay.
That's a very good point.
Oh, who's in that? Is it Russell Crowe?
It's Russell Crowe. Yeah. That's one of his best performances I've ever seen.
It was one of his early ones, wasn't it, when he was back in New Zealand or whatever?
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant.
Mm.
And that's it for the social media.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ben, it's your topic, isn't it, next?
It is, and I'm going to go back to something that we briefly touched upon on a very early episode. I think it was something like episode 2 or 3. We had a listener question about for us to give our favourite quote from a film, and we kind of did it off the top of our heads. But I want us to go away and have a proper think about what our top 3 all-time movie quotes are and come back with those next time around.
That's pretty good, because a couple of weeks ago as well, we had Elizabeth Marshall ask that.
Oh, brilliant.
So,
there you go.
Okay, we're ticking connected. A few boxes, so hopefully, Elizabeth, you'll be happy we've ticked your box.
We've been to our local View cinema to see Everest, the new real life, based on a true story, disaster film directed by Baltasar Kormákur. It stars Jason Clarke, John Hawkes, Josh Brolin, Sam Worthington, Jake Gyllenhaal, Robin Wright, Keira Knightley, Emily Watson, Michael Kelly, and every other actor working. It's a big ensemble piece.
It is.
And it was a big, big movie. Big, powerful movie. Adam, instant thoughts.
Visually stunning.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I mean, the some of the shots, and very moving.
And the reason why it's so visually stunning and so moving is because it tells the true story of the 1996 Mount Everest disaster, which at the time was the deadliest day ever on Mount Everest.
Until there was an avalanche, was there a few?
Well, what happened, at that time, in 1996, the story the film tells, 12 people died. And then in 2004, there was a more serious disaster where I believe 16 people died. And the grand irony of it was that occurred when they were filming the film Everest.
Wow.
Their second unit were out in Nepal by Everest when that happened, this more deadly disaster.
In 2014, yeah. You said four a minute.
Sorry, 2014.
I was going to say, what? They're filming this?
It took them 11 years to film this. That's why it's so spectacular. No, in 2014. So it's been surpassed. And it was then surpassed again, I think, earlier this year.
There was an earthquake, wasn't
it? Yeah, there was an earthquake, indeed. But at the time, it was the deadliest disaster. And it tells the story of Rob Hall, played by Jason Clarke, who leads a lot of sort of less skilled climbers on expeditions up Everest, and it's about how there was a disaster and a lot of them died. And it was, as you say, Adam, a powerful film and visually stunning. Mark, instant thoughts.
Just emotional. I left the cinema wanting to cry a little bit. I won't lie. Yeah. It was very... We went to see this on a Friday night,
mm-hmm.
and it was not a Friday night movie at all. I just came away just literally feeling quite bleak and low, and just like, the worst part is it's a real life true story. Yeah, yeah. And it wasn't just a Hollywood sort of Vertical Limit film where it's just all about this amazing climb and then, you know, Michael Bay sort of budget throwing themselves off and how they survive but get back in time to put the US flag up there and see their beautiful kids and all that. It was none of that. It was harsh reality.
Yeah.
And it just left me feeling like, whoa. And I've not seen a film so emotional for a long time because we've seen quite a lot of sort of Marvel blockbusters this year and big Hollywood films, but it was just a really well-made film that was just so depressing.
I mean, I agree with you. I was emotionally bereft by the end of it. It gripped me. You know, I'm not even going to wait till the scores to say this. I fucking loved it. I was blown away by it. I thought it was spectacular. I couldn't take my eyes off the screen, and it was just so tense because you knew it was building towards something bad. If you go and see a fictional disaster movie, you know it's building to something bad, and depending on how well it's made, you're tense or you're not.
Mm-hmm.
This film was very well made, and also because it was a true story and we knew it didn't end well, I was just on tenterhooks through the whole thing. Yeah. I was sat there just gripped, like, you know, shit's going to go south any second now. And it was difficult to watch, but in the best way.
I've never seen a film move from moments of elation
mm-hmm.
to moments of pure just heartbreak within minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, from the moment they first summit, how happy they all are, how excited they all mm-hmm. are, just to how bad things go south.
And that's the thing, because we mentioned it's about Rob Hall, who was an experienced climber, and that was his fifth trip up Everest. And in fact, when he reached the top of Everest on that climb, it made him the only non-Sherpa to have reached the summit on five different occasions. So he was an experienced climber, and there were a couple of other guys. But a lot of the guys who were with them, who they were taking on these tours, are inexperienced climbers. Mm-hmm. So as you say, you know, they get to base camp, or they get to, you know, camp one, camp two, and they're elated. And you see the joy that they're doing this. They're actually living their dream. And then shit goes wrong.
Very bad. And
by God, how does it go wrong? Good Lord.
I think what I really liked, and this is no pun intended, that there was no big cliffhanger. And I'm being serious about this. I know it sounds absolutely ridiculous because we're being serious, but we got to see everything. There wasn't none of this text at the end saying, we actually saw the deaths. We saw the bodies being left. It wasn't just left and they kind of just put up the credits saying 6 years after the bodies were found. It was the harsh reality that there was a young... there was a young girl that was with them that didn't look very experienced. I don't think she spoke English. I think she was Chinese.
It's about the Japanese woman.
Yes.
She wasn't young.
She was about 50. Yeah.
She was the most experienced. She'd already climbed six of the world's tallest seven peaks, and Everest was the last one she needed to do to have done all seven.
And then she
dies on a mountain.
Yeah, and
I believe she was actually the oldest
woman
to summit.
Yeah, I think it's the oldest woman in the world. I was like, what's she doing up there? Fucking hell, leave her alone. But the fact that we see her just dead, and they have to walk past and leave this body there, and it's just so depressing.
It's horrible.
But one of the key things in it for me was the obviously the true story of Beck. I mean, he was left for dead.
Played by Josh Brolin.
Yeah, left for dead, and he actually managed to pretty much make it down by himself.
Yeah, he was with the Japanese woman, and they'd got to one of the ridges. They'd got lost in a blizzard, and he basically lay down to die, and some of the rescuers came back up to get him, and they were like, he was still breathing, but they were like, we can't move him or else we'll die. We're just going to have to leave him to die of exposure. But, you know, the trying for the human spirit and all that, and then the next day he just wanders back into camp, frostbitten feet, hands and nose, still breathing. Crazy.
When the most experienced there, who does the actual leading, died. Yeah. It's harsh, really.
Because Rob went up to save that guy, Doug.
Yeah.
Doug, the mailman, first mailman on Everest, and he sort of fell off the cliff. And then Rob, because he'd gone back up to save him, Rob ended up perishing. It was, Christ, it was so
The way Doug
moving.
Went, it was kind of looked as well, did he throw himself off because he had just had enough and didn't want to stop everyone else? Because he kind of detached himself, didn't he? Mm-hmm. And leant over,
he
and then he just kind of, it was horrendous.
Yeah. And that's pure speculation because no one knows what really happened to Doug. They know he, because Rob told them when he called back that Doug had gone, but he didn't elaborate on that to say what had happened to Doug. So no one truly knows what happened to this Doug.
I think one of the things about the film that was so gripping and interesting was there's a moment, a really, really emotional moment, where they actually get his wife, Rob's wife on the radio with Rob. And he says, and she's like, hey, if anyone could do it, you can. And he starts sort of moving his way up. The Hillary step, is it?
Yeah.
Starts moving his way up out because he's been sheltered all night. He's frostbitten himself. He starts sort of moving his way back, and then the rescue team has to pull out because the blizzard's getting even worse again in the morning. And, you know, if this was a Hollywood blockbuster, it'd be, you know, triumph of the human spirit.
Yeah.
He's going to make it. But it wasn't. They had to say, look, we're going to try and get someone to tomorrow, knowing full well that he wasn't going to last another night. Mm-hmm. And he just essentially curled up to die.
Yeah, he did.
The top of this mountain.
And it's heart-wrenching because it would have been moving. You know, I've kind of already alluded to this. This would have been moving if it was fictional, but it wasn't. These things really happened to real people.
This was a true account of the 1996 Mount Everest disaster. Yeah.
And nothing, you know, from what I've done a lot of reading on this afterwards, and it doesn't seem like anything's particularly been embellished.
No.
It seems like these are the truths, these are the facts as they have been left, you know.
These are the facts as told by the people that survived.
Yeah.
I believe the reporter for Outside Magazine, is it John Krakow?
Yeah.
He was one of the first people to write a book, is that?
Yeah, he wrote a book pretty much straight away, I think within a year of the events,
One of the first people to write a book on it, and since then numerous people have actually wrote their accounts of kind of what happened.
Yeah.
Interestingly, Anatoly,
who was,
Scott Fisher, part of Scott Fisher's Mountain Madness.
Yeah, Mountain Madness were a different group other than Rob Hall's Adventure Consultants, and he was sort of Scott Fisher's number two, and he didn't like the way Krakauer wrote about him in his book, so he's written a rebuttal to that, but then he died
Krakow,
a year later.
If I remember, criticised Anatoly for not using oxygen.
For not using oxygen, because he said then he wouldn't have oxygen to give to other people if he needed to. And also that he said he descended the mountain too quickly, rather than being there to help guide people down. So it was a whole thing. But
Anatoly suggests that he descended quickly to get help to go back up the mountain.
Yeah. So it's all, you know, it's he said, she said, really. Yeah. There's not a lot you can do about that. But it's just heartbreaking, that film.
Do you know what I liked about it? The fact that they had all these big names. You started then and read off all the names that were in there.
Yeah.
That's usually all the lists you get on some shitty film like New Year's Eve, you know, those sort of films.
Yeah.
And they all delivered bloody good performances, even Sam Worthington.
Yeah, I thought he was really good.
And normally he's absolutely dreadful in ruins films, but he was superb. I actually think, and, you know, it's not often that I'll give her credit, but what's Weirdmouth's real name?
Weirdmouth?
Keira Knightley. She has the weirdest mouth ever.
Has she?
He said the same thing after Imitation Game, didn't he?
Look at her mouth next time. But
I don't particularly think she does, Mark, but go on.
She was fantastic, and, you know, I believed in her, and you just saw the heartache that she's going through.
She's in a bit of a career renaissance at the minute.
She is, but I think, you know, I don't have many criticisms of this film, but my one criticism is I don't think they used the female characters very well.
No.
Keira Knightley played Rob Hall, Jason Clarke's wife, and you only see her in, I think, three scenes, like phone calls back to home, because she was at their home in New Zealand. And then also Josh Brolin's character's wife was played by Robin Wright, another fantastic actress.
Yeah.
And again, you see her in three scenes. If you're going to use the wife characters so sparingly, don't hire actresses as talented and as useful as Keira Knightley and Robin Wright. Get a couple of unknowns, because I think it's unfair to hire people of their caliber and not use them. It was it's a true story, so you can only tell the truth of it. They couldn't just make up female characters on the mountain that weren't there. So it was going to be mostly a lads, a film about blokes. But if you're going to use the female characters, don't hire superstar actresses. Get unknowns, because I think they wasted Knightley and Penn. Penn. Robin Wright. She used to be Robin Wright Penn, but then she divorced Sean Penn. She's just Wright now.
Shame. But I thought that Jake Gyllenhaal wasn't in it as much as I thought. The way the trailer makes out, you think he's going to be loads in it because he's obviously coming off the back of Nightcrawler and these big films recently. It was nice of him to not actually be the main thing about it. And it's about half an hour until we first see him. And he's quite the cool dude, isn't he? He's kind of got his glasses and he's all about having a bit of fun and getting drunk quite a lot. But I believed in him. But for me, the star of the film was Josh Brolin. I thought he was absolutely brilliant.
It was Brolin, really Brolin and Clark. Loved,
yeah, Clark was phenomenal.
Clark was very good. It's difficult to pick a star. I thought the guy who played Doug.
Yeah, John really Hawks. Well. John Hawks is a superb actor.
He was very good as Doug as well. And you said there that Brolin is back. And I can't remember who plays Helen on the Mountain as well.
Oh, she was very good. Emily Watson. She was the only female character, I think, that was properly serviced. I think she had a real role and she was superb.
There was no one in this cast that detracted.
No, at all.
Everyone kind of added something to
Even Sam Worthington.
Who's usually just
we'll never say this again on recording, so this is a moment of history.
Can we cut this out where we're praising Sam Worthington? Can we not let this go out?
So, yeah, fair play to him.
Yeah, I mean, I've read quite a few reviews of this film now, and the one negative that a lot of people call upon is the fact that it's a great film in terms of spectacle, but not so good in terms of characterisation. They say that the characters are quite thinly drawn. And I think, one, that is true, but it's true by necessity, because it's more about the events than it is the individuals. But my opposition to that is, the characters are thinly drawn, but I think they did it really efficiently.
Yeah.
Like, you knew who Beck was. So Josh Brolin's character, the first scene you meet him, he's talking to John Hawks' character, Doug, in the airport, and he's sort of giving Doug a bit of stick that Doug was up on the mountain the year before and failed to reach the top. So you'd got it. Within the first scene, you knew his character, Beck, was a little bit of a dick, a bit of a ribber. You'd got it. You'd nailed his character down.
Yeah.
Jason Clarke, the first scene you see with Rob is him sort of hugging his wife, I'll be back, you know, I'll be there for the kid's birth. It was efficient sort of shorthand characterization, and it wasn't massively well developed, but it didn't need to be. I think they did it well.
It did. It showcased the personalities that you needed to showcase.
Yeah.
The bits where Rob Hall was giving the talk about how, you know, the human body isn't supposed to function at this altitude. Mm-hmm. You will be literally dying as you're moving through this mountain. He's sharing his experience. He knows exactly what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You've then got your characters who, you know, like Doug, he was motivated to get up there for his personal reasons. You know, kids had helped him raise the money back home. Beck, like you said, was a bit of a dick. He was ribbing, he was joking, he was laughing. But he was quite humbled by the end of it after the experience himself. He probably changed his life quite a lot, I imagine. Lost both his hands and his nose, I believe.
Beck did, yeah.
In the end. And, you know, it's the weirdest, the problem I had, and I'm not sure, I didn't know the man personally, but Scott Fisher's characterization I thought was a bit odd.
Mm.
It made him seem like, although he had been a mountaineer for so long, like he didn't really respect what he was doing.
Yeah, he seemed a bit of a cowboy, didn't he?
Yeah, and I don't think someone who did what he did would have been like that.
Yeah, quite possibly. That's why we need to read sort of that that Anatoly's book to find out.
Because they made him out to seem like a bit of a, you know, a drunkard, a bit of a just enjoying himself. He doesn't really care if he gets people up the mountain kind of thing.
Yeah.
He's just in it to try and get the money off them. But I don't think he was like that. He doesn't. Anyone that summited Everest like he did, 3 times I think it was, I don't think he'd have taken those unnecessary risks.
No.
I've listened to a few other people's reviews on other podcasts and radio shows and stuff, and one thing that's pissing me off a little bit is people are saying, it's not bad, it just takes a bit too long until it gets to the action scenes, and it's not meant to be an action film.
No, it's a true story.
And I wish people would like not expect this big Hollywood blockbuster. It's not Michael Bay, it's not Transformers, it's not good about that. If you're going to see a visual, massive, huge explosion and stuff, you don't go and see this film. This is about a real story that's about more about the characters and the lives they're living and how much of a travesty it was that all these people's lives got so fucked up because of it. And the CGI for what was needed was unbelievable.
Flawless.
And really did make me, what I liked about it, it wasn't too over the top. Even though this is a huge disaster, it wasn't done in a silly, stupid, over the top way. It was done that made me feel like that's how it would be if I was climbing up this mountain as well. And when the nights came and the weather was shit and the tents were getting blown around, it wasn't stupid over the top Hollywood. It was real. That's how it would be. And it wouldn't get ripped up and fly off. It would stay there, but you'd be scary as fuck to be in there. And
Cormacur's direction was superb. It was not one of those bullshit Roland Emmerich disaster movies, like, was it 2012 or whatever, all that kind of garbage. It could have easily been like that in the hands of a shit director like Emmerich, but it wasn't. I thought Cormacur's direction was superb, and it was really, you felt like you were on the mountain.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the 3D played into that. the 3D wasn't sort of overly in your face. You know those films you go to in the 3D?
It was subtle.
Like that annoying thing in Mad Max when the steering wheel comes out. Yeah. There was none of that shit. It was just immersive 3D. You felt like you were on the mountain. It felt like the snow was coming at you. And it felt real. Like you say, it felt real and gritty. It didn't feel like overblown Hollywood nonsense.
And they could have. With a mountain climbing and the sort of snow breaking away, 3D could have been perfect, coming straight at you.
Yeah.
What I liked is the depth they did with it. So when they're walking over the bridge, and there's Brolin's character walking across the bridge, it's the fact that instead of just filming it, they went underneath so you could see the actual scale of how much he's got to get past. And then they do the bird's eye view, and that's when the 3D works. And I'm not a big fan of the stupid over-the-top 3D, which you still get on a lot of films. But this was good 3D. It was just to show you the actual scale of things and the depth of everything that they had to go through, and I bloody love that.
Yeah,
so I can't wait to own that on Blu-ray and watch it again because I thought it was great.
I think the fact that it was a true to life story made it a bit easier to kind of tone down maybe the 3D aspect of it a bit in that respect, like not have it as so in your face as it would be in a fictional film.
I think you're right. Actually, I think if this would have been an entirely fictional film and looked exactly the way it does, people would have moaned that it wasn't big enough. Mm-hmm. It wasn't over the top enough. And I think you're right. The fact that it's real allowed them to keep it on a human scale.
I think some of the criticism that's coming at the film's way is unfair. And I think it's by people that didn't necessarily know that this was a true story going in.
Yeah.
I think they were going in expecting this big old disaster, Hollywood disaster movie, Triumph of the Human Spirit, and actually have been set back quite a bit by the fact that at the end, obviously, when it's showing the pictures of the real team.
Yeah.
You saw these people are going, well, this is a true story. I think the trailers didn't really advertise it as a true story.
No.
No,
they
didn't.
And that's the problem. And I think people are expecting to go and see the Vertical Limit, the stupid 2012 sort of crap. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem.
Yeah.
So that's what you are getting. Some people going, oh, it's only a 2-star because I just didn't really feel like it was enough. You just didn't get enough action.
Yeah.
Fuck off. One thing I wanted to mention, can you pronounce this name for me, please, Ben? Because you've been pronouncing the director, and I'm not even going to go there, but this is the composer.
Dario Marianelli.
Thank you very much. I thought the score and the sound was brilliant throughout this film.
Ditto.
And it's one of those scores that isn't overpowering like Interstellar, where you're hearing it all the way through. But for every scene that they're climbing, you forget that there's a background score. And it was just enough to keep the suspense there, to make you relate to these scenes, to put you in those positions. And this guy absolutely nailed it. And they don't give enough credit sometimes for composers. And this was done beautifully.
Yeah.
What a great film. I'm loving the fact that we love this.
Yeah, me too. You know, because I had this feeling that, because all the reviews are sort of giving it sort of 6 and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I've come away really loving it. And I was expecting to be the only one of the three of us who dug it as much as this. But it seems like you guys are on the same page.
Was that a little gag there? You dug it?
What?
Dug.
No.
And I'm glad, because last episode I thought we'd be using this episode to be like, oh, it was chilling and, you know, it was so ice to see that character.
Well, it left me cold.
Because it was very sensible and such a serious film. It's nice that we haven't, you know,
gone to the puns.
Even though I got the cliffhanger in there.
I think one of the things I said to Ben was, I'm quite glad I didn't review this the night I saw it.
Yeah.
Because I think my review would have been quite different. I didn't really know how to feel about it when I came out of it originally. Hence why I actually went and read about the events themselves to kind of learn a bit more about it.
I want to read those books.
It does. It does change your perspective on the film when you actually know about the events a bit in a bit more detail.
Yeah.
One thing I was going to say at the start of this is the one thing I was thinking when I'm watching it, and it's only just my own way of thinking, was why the fuck do these people put themselves through this? And I understand that. I think there's quoted at one scene, like, you took my $60,000. They have to pay a lot of money to get this huge once in a lifetime opportunity, and it's, you know, not many people get this chance. It's like going to space. It's one of those things that it's just rich people get the chance to do. And I just don't understand why you put yourself through it when your body starts to shut down. You need oxygen for 20 hours of the day. I understand there's an adrenaline rush and there's things that people want to do, but when they get there, they just kind of tap the top or just go, I know it's a sense of achievement, but fuck that.
It's a view. Why would you bother? Else has had, isn't it? It seems like that.
I mean, we obviously, the three of us, aren't the kind of guys that do it. I think that's fair to assume. But a couple of the guys in the film explain their reasons, and, you know, whether we agree. You know, like Beck, he says that he admits to basically being depressed. He says when he's at home with his wife and kids who he loves dearly, he just has a black cloud over him. But when as soon as he's on a mountain, the cloud is gone.
Yeah. That's, the other guy, Doug. Was it for the kids at school he wanted to be an inspiration?
Exactly. He wanted to show these kids at this school group where he helps out. He wants to show them that your average guy can achieve great things. And, you know, people have their reasons.
Fair play. I just can't get my mindset into it.
It sounds like a bloody pain in the ass.
I can't be asked to walk to co-op. I'll get in the car and do it because it's easier. So why would I do this?
Walking up the stairs to my flat kills me.
Exactly.
Right? And that's two flights of stairs. Yeah. So I'm not climbing up
a
bloody mountain.
And if there was a lift here, you would do it every day.
Big time.
I remember coming out actually slightly infuriated by the idea that some of these people went up there, put their own lives in danger, despite having wives and kids at home.
Well, yeah, maybe when you got married and kids, you might be like, I'll do anything to fucking get away from these.
I understand why Rob Hall did it. It was how he earned his living. It's how he provided for his family.
And it was how he met his missus. They met as climbers, so she knew.
So to actually generate that money for his company so that he could actually go out and afford to do things with his wife and kids, fair enough. But some of the guys out there, when you've got people depending on you back home, to put yourself in a situation where you could die, it just seemed a bit selfish.
One of my favourite lines from the film is on that topic is when Beck turns to Doug and says, "What does your wife think of all this?" And he says, "Oh, she's fine with it ever since we divorced."
Yeah, it was so good.
And that's the thing, it just shows the sorts of characters they had who do this sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's just obviously really kind of, it makes it even worse at the end of it.
It does. Shall we wrap it up? Shall we score this?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I'm going to start.
Go on, then.
8.
Yep, ditto.
Yep, I can't. 9. Say again?
9.
Crikey.
9,
yeah.
Wow.
9.
Yeah, it's an 8 for me. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was a magnificent visual spectacle. I thought the storytelling was efficient. I thought it was harrowing. I love Jason Clarke. When we reviewed Genesis, Terminator Genesis, I went on about how much I love Jason Clarke. I think he's brilliant in this again. He should be in everything for me now, Jason Clarke. It just really moved. I've got an old cold heart. But this film moved me, man. I nearly wept.
And the director was absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, and
you know, one of the reasons why it gets such a high score from me is the direction itself. I mean, the way that film ends with just a few shots of the mountain, it obviously shows Rob Hall's body still in that sort of crevice, covered in snow, jumps back to people arriving home to their families, and then shows the images of the team and kind of explains that some of these bodies have never been found.
Yeah.
Looking at his previous work, he's done 2 Guns, which I've not seen that film.
With Wahlberg and Denzel Washington?
Yeah, never seen that.
No, I mean, neither.
And Contraband, which I never got around to seeing.
Is that Wahlberg as well?
I think he must be loving
Bloody
Wahlberg.
Loves Wahlberg. But, they should have had Wahlberg up at the mountain shouting at snow.
But he could be a one-hit wonder. You never know, because I don't think they're great films from what I've heard.
But you know what? I really hope he's not, and I think based
I'd
on
love
that,
to
he
see
won't,
what he's
we,
doing now.
Won't be. No. But, yeah, I wish him all the best. So, skip to the end overall score, 8 out of 10.
If you listened to our last episode, which hopefully you did, we gave the chance to win a Canon 1200D digital SLR camera, which I think is probably the best prize we've ever given away.
No doubt. We've given away some cracking prizes, but this is a real piece of kit.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And the way you can win that is basically you have to submit a photo that you've taken that you think is very scary. And we're going to judge it and, you know, give the chance. Well, we're going to give it away, which I don't want to do, but we're going to have to. And to be fair, we've had some really, really good photos come through. Some absolutely shit scary photos. And fair play, people have been really imaginative. So fair play.
Yeah.
But as you might not know, our next episode is episode 30. And I always like having a bit of a party when it gets to episode 10, episode 20.
Yeah.
I want to extend this competition just for 2 more weeks because these photos are really good. And some people have said, oh, I've had a really good idea, but I want to try and borrow this equipment. And people are really thinking. So we're going to extend this and we're going to announce the winner on episode 30, which is in 2 weeks' time. But in the meantime, I think it's good that the good guys at Universal, the real beautiful guys, have given us some very cool Everest packs to give away.
Nice.
If you're thinking of going up Everest or any big hills, there are some basically some big woolly hats.
Just a big hill, isn't
it? Which are really good. Some big hooded fleeces, which are really, really cool. And some popular like thermal t-shirts and stuff. So it's going to keep you warm in the winter.
Yeah. Can I just say that Skip to the End would like to note that this little hat and hoodie that you may win are not good enough to wear when climbing Everest. You will die.
Yeah, but wear them with pride and enter the competition. Now, Ben, give me a good question to put out to the listeners there that they can enter. Something to do with Everest.
How about this? We've already mentioned this on the episode. What is the name of the real-life person that Jason Clarke played in the film Everest?
That's a piece of piss.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant. So if you want to if you want to enter this competition, go on our Facebook, which is Facebook.com/skipthempodcast, and write on our wall and let us know. Go on Twitter at STTEpodcast and, you know, tweet us your answer or email us podcast@skiptheend.co.uk. And we'll announce the winner on episode 30 along with the camera. So it's a massive giveaway in episode 30.
And if you don't know the answer to that question, literally just, you know, jump back about 15 minutes.
Yeah. Or go on IMDb, whatever you want to do.
Exactly.
But that's how easy it's going to be. We've got 3 packs to give away, so lots of winners, like the Special Olympics. This is going to be good.
Everyone's a winner in the Special Olympics.
Oh, shit, not everyone's a winner in this competition. But hey, this is going to be good. And we're going to announce it in 2 weeks' time on episode 30.
Skip back in time. That sounds terrible.
I like that.
I'm never saying that again.
Time.
2001. It's a good year. So I'm going to throw it straight out to you, Mark, because I've got a sneaking suspicion that you and I might have the same one.
And you won't judge me this week and give me those eyes of, oh, you pathetic loser.
Well, that's if we have the same one. Yeah. You know, let's wait and see. What have you got?
I don't think we have. I'm going with Donnie Darko.
No, we haven't.
So there we go.
But I love that film, so I'm not going to give you shit eye.
I think you've gone with Spirited Away.
I have gone with Spirited Away. Tell us about Donnie Darko, Mark.
Donnie Darko has been featured on every single episode of this podcast ever since we've made it. Either director, acting, film from nowhere, film with Donnie in the title, whatever.
We've already mentioned it today.
Yeah, it's a fucking brilliant film.
It is.
Richard Kelly's one-off brilliant, amazing film. Because I've not seen Southland Tales, I can't comment.
Yeah.
So for me, work of genius. I've mentioned it a few times.
What's this film called?
Donnie Darko. Not heard of it?
I don't think you've ever mentioned that.
No.
Adam's not been paying attention for the last 29 episodes.
It's just so different to anything else you'll ever see. Mm-hmm. We've talked about it a lot of times. It's all about time travel. It's made well. It's fucking weird. And Jake Gyllenhaal, again, gives a performance. I think it was one of his debut performances where you start to take note of his actor. So Jake Gyllenhaal special, this is. You know, we're going to get in there. But absolutely outstanding. I think that it was just a travesty that this wasn't as successful in the cinema as it should have been.
Yeah.
But luckily, DVD and Blu-ray and cult. It's a cult film now. It's up there with Clerks and Reservoir Dogs and all the, you know, Pulp Fiction. It really is. It should always be there as well.
It'll live on. I think successive generations will keep coming back to this film. It's never going to die. It's going to be a big cult film for time immemorial.
I think so as well.
Yeah.
And Drew Barrymore is phenomenal in it as well.
She is quite good. Noah Wyle is really good as his teacher as well.
Everyone in it.
Yeah.
It's just
Patrick Swayze is so good.
I always forget he's dead as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's a shame. But I'm not going to spend more than 2 minutes talking about this film. I just want everyone in the world to go and see it if you've never seen it.
Yeah. It is one of those films now that if you go into HMV or one of the many, many other good stores available, you can pick it up on DVD for a quid.
Yeah.
Get it.
And
do it. Watch it. You'll love it.
Even if you've seen it, do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's just one of those films that a lot of people forget about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those films that when you go back and watch it, it's not like, oh, it's aged, or this doesn't look as good anymore, or, oh, it's not as good as I remember. I think it gets better every time I watch it.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. And Jake Gyllenhaal, I mean, we spoke earlier about one-hit wonder actors who have only really done one thing. Jake Gyllenhaal's kind of the other way around. You know, find the bad performance.
Do you know what? It's all hits, isn't it, with Gyllenhaal? Yeah. I've still not watched Southpaw yet, so I've not got a decision on that. But everything I've seen it.
That's great.
As a film, it's all right.
Yeah.
He's really good.
So that's my choice. Mm-hmm. And do you want to talk a bit more about the...
Spirited Away, Ben.
Let's go to Spirited Away. I mean, when we did our top animated films of all time topic of many, many months ago, I had Spirited Away as the number one. It is my favourite animated film of all time. It is in my top 10 films of all time of any stripe. I think it's perfect. As far as animated films go, I think it's perfect.
It's
beautiful
as well.
It looks beautiful. The acting, both in the Japanese the Japanese version and the English dub is great. The story is beautiful. The music, absolutely everything about it is so, so lovely. And it's one of those films that I make people watch. I'll say, have you heard of Spirited Away? No, right, you've got to sit down, you've got to watch this. My little brother, when I first showed him, was mesmerised by it. Me and my brother then made my mum watch it, and she loved it. And, you know, many, many friends I've got to see it. You know, Hayao Miyazaki is a genius in the field. All of the Studio Ghibli films that he was involved in are great. Howl's Moving Castle, that kind of stuff. You know, My Neighbor Totoro. Everything he does, he's King Midas, man. Everything he does, he touches, he turns to gold. But this is the paramount. This is the best. This is the high bar that not just every animated film must aim for, but any film at all. You know, if you pin this up on your board and say, okay, we're making a film, lads. This is what we're aiming for. Fine, good. Good. That should be aiming for the stars, because it is an impeccable, brilliant, brilliant film. And
you're
it was
fan.
The best film of
yeah,
I like
it
quite a bit. Yeah. It's my film of 2001. It's my film of many, many years. It's just super. It's perfect.
There's every year I'll always watch Home Alone at Christmas.
Yeah.
Halloween, I'll watch Halloween. Mm-hmm. I watch The Thing every week anyway. But Spirited Away and Ponyo are two animated films that I will always watch every year. There's not like a certain time, but they'll never a year go by. Spirited Away is just beautiful. And anyone listening out there, you should buy the Blu-ray, because it's just absolutely incredible in HD, and the animation comes to life. Yeah. And there's not many films that are that
impressive.
That's it. Yeah, it is. It's like a demo disc. It's fucking incredible. The colours, the animation.
Yeah.
And it's just perfection.
And do you know now, a couple of weeks ago, on our anniversary special, was it last time? I can't remember how long ago it was now, but we revisited our top five films of all time. And I'm thinking now that I need to make another change. We'll make this official in a year's time when we revisit it again. But I'm going to have to put Spirited Away in my top five, because I'm thinking about it now. The only film on this show that I've given 10 out of 10 to was Blade Runner, which I think is perfect. And thinking about it now, I think Spirited Away is perfect as well. I think if you asked me to rate it on a scale of 1 to 10 right now, I'd give it 10. Therefore, it has to go in my top five, I think. It is perfect, that film.
Well, stick around in 24 episodes' time. Ben might redo his...
and see if Ben remembers
to
do that.
Yeah, sort of masterpiece. So, yeah. Adam, surprise us.
Yeah, it's a film I've spoken about before. If I said to you, Billy Crystal, John Goodman and Steve Buscemi...
Nice.
What would your thoughts be?
Old comedians who Monsters have seen Inc. better days.
Lovely.
And again, another amazing animated film.
Yeah, it's my favourite film of 2001. Mm. It's got... the story is just... I've said before how much I love the story. The concept, the idea, the whole thing is the monsters scare kids in their bedrooms because it powers their own world. It's just so out there. It's so Pixar. It's such a Pixar concept. And to get people like, you know, John Goodman and Billy Crystal involved, and then Steve Buscemi as Randall Boggs. I mean, even John Ratzenberger, who I believe Pixar actually referred to as their King Midas. Apparently everything he's in just gets big numbers at the box office.
Yeah.
And even though he has such a small part as the Abominable Snowman, it's just brilliant. And, you know, the character of Boo is so cute.
Oh, God, little baby Boo.
It's so cute, it's unbelievable. Roz.
Yeah.
I'm watching without me.
That's a pretty good impression.
Yeah, that's good.
It's just such a fun film. And the animation, you said about Spirited Away, the animation, how much it looks. The animation in this is perfect as well.
Yeah, Sully's fur, that's what you need.
We've talked about the fur, I think, three different times on this podcast, but it is unbelievable.
If you ever do top five films with fur in,
I'm telling you. But no, everything about it is just great. The concept is great. The acting, the voice acting is great. The animation is great. And if you're an animated film and you get those three things, you know, right in the respect of good to great, you're making a good film.
Big time. I tell you what, 2001 was a hell of a year for animated film. Because as I said, when we did our top three animated films, I had Monsters, Inc. in my top three with Spirited Away. So that's two films from 2001. Yeah. What a banner year that was.
Incredible.
Yeah.
2000's pretty good. Do you want to hear what the social media guy said?
Yep.
We put it out to Twitter. Miles Gleb, which is at Gold Rush Gleb, The Royal Tenenbaums.
Good film.
Very good film. Movie blog at movie blog B. A Beautiful Mind.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. Good friend of the podcast, John Brooks, has said Training Day. I bloody love Training Day. I'm not going to lie.
Do you know, I think that's a massively overrated film.
I still think it's bloody good.
It's fun. It's a fun film, but it's not a film that anyone should have won an Oscar for.
Fair enough. Ben Fenlel. which is
guarantee that's not
Finland.
His name.
Finland, we'll say Finland. Yes,
Janis Joplin.
Hannibal, the brain scene shocked a woman enough to walk out the cinema that I saw it in.
I love that brain scene. He's talking about when they cut the top of the head off and he's eating the brain.
So bad. At Memento Gory, Moulin Rouge. It was one of the all-time favourite films. And it was out in 2001. Can't argue.
Never seen it. It's a musical. Shouldn't have to.
At Adea underscore 100, Mulholland Drive. Brilliant film. David Lynch.
Yeah, weird as fuck, that film.
Absolutely superb. Oh, I really want to watch that again now. Mm. Burgers DJ at Jimmy Burge, Monsters Inc. by a mile. I've only just watched it again and it's absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. Ben won't agree. Steve Toogood, Fellowship of the Ring.
Ridiculous. Get a grip, grow up.
Tyrell Leelson, Shrek. There you go.
Shrek.
Shrek can't have been 2001 Good God. Banner year for animation.
It is the animated year. And finally, Al Robinson, Ocean's 11.
Oh dear.
See, I'm generally quite shocked with Mark. So I thought he'd go for something like Amelie.
Is that 2001?
Absolutely
as
amazing.
Well?
Yeah.
Or something, you know, it's horror, something like Jeepers Creepers.
But I remember that Jeepers Creepers is a really good horror.
Jeepers Pedos.
I remember
the director. Right, this I'm going to have a rant here. Jeepers Creepers 3 has just been announced, which I'm sure you know. And I assume as a horror fan, you like Jeepers Creepers 1 and 2.
I like the first one.
Yeah. The director and writer of that film, whose name I've never committed to memory because I shouldn't
Watkins.
Have to. Yeah, it's not him. But he is a convicted paedophile. He was imprisoned for having oral sex with a kid on the
set of the
on
film?
The set of the first film. Not Jeepers Creepers, but his first film. And then for them to make films with him in Hollywood. I don't know what
ooh, what gives me the creeps.
I don't know what the world's come to, that he's still getting work. But that's just me, hey.
And everyone, it should be.
Actually, wait, apparently not everyone, because he's still getting work. Should convicted paedophile. So enjoy Jeepers Creepers 3, Mark.
How did this come about? What were we just talking about that led to that?
I'm just saying, I'm surprised you didn't choose them like Jeepers Creepers as your favourite film of all time, since now you're the director.
Just because of Donnie Darko was the first ever film that I actually imported from America as well, when Region 1 DVD players were around and you had to pay 25 quid.
I can name this because it doesn't exist anymore, but did you use a website called CD Now? That it was always like Japanese imports.
Yeah. Region 4, but I had to use Movie Time then, but CD Wow was
CD
amazing.
Wow, that's it. CD Wow,
So good.
So apparently 2001, a banner year for animation and paedophiles.
Big time.
next episode, year 2000. I might use Busted for that.
That's 3000, isn't it?
Oh, okay. Got it.
Well, I shouldn't know that.
Skip forward in time. Rewatch time.
What accent was
Rewatch
that?
Rewatch time. Jack and Jill. Yeah. I think this came off the back of the outstanding performance from Tom Hardy as two characters. I thought it'd be nice to tie it in with the one and only Adam Sandler.
Makes sense.
He delivered us the performance of not just two guys, but a guy and a girl.
Yeah.
Twins, Jack and Jill.
Yeah.
This is a film that is, I'm going to admit now and put my hand up, I hadn't seen before, so a rewatch was just an excuse to throw pain on you both.
Mm. I hadn't seen it, but I believe you had, hadn't you, Adam?
Nope.
Oh, brilliant.
This is not a rewatch, this is a watch.
This is good. So I'm going to throw it to Adam because I know Ben's rage from the last episode needs just chilling down a bit.
Well, instantly, tying into the last rewatch of Battlefield Earth, this film is actually the film that broke the record for most Razzies won in a year.
It did. Previously held by Battlefield Earth.
Earth. And God, can you see why?
I'll just turn the levels down. Give me a sec, because I can see us all getting a bit angry here. I'll just turn them down. There we go.
The fuck was this? Honestly, who keeps giving Adam Sandler money?
Himself.
Who keeps saying, I've got a good idea for a film? What is it, Adam? It's I play twins. Right, okay, twin boys. No. I play one man and one woman.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Al Pacino's in it. Al, come on. What are you doing, lad? Seriously. What is this?
You know, putting aside the fact that identical fraternal twins is impossible by, you know, how DNA works, you can't have identical fraternal twins, which is, say, one man, one woman. Putting that aside, what the frig was he thinking? And you say, you know, who keeps giving him this money? The problem was, up until this film, I believe, every film he'd released prior to that, every film he'd top-lined, had hit the 100 million barrier. And his films are usually quite cheap to make, so they're profit-making enterprises. So even, you know, they're not blockbusters, but they make a profit. So that's why he will find a studio to throw money at him. This one died on its arse, and I think he might have released another one since that also did, which is why now he's now signed something like a six-picture deal with Netflix, because he can't get a studio to make his films now, because they're not getting 100 million anymore.
He's an absolute fucking idiot. He really is. And this film...
Imagine that on the back of the DVD case.
The thing is, right, I don't know if in this film my respect for him has dropped even lower than I thought it could have.
Yeah.
But I'm also now looking at Pacino thinking, you're just as bad. You're a fucking idiot. Because you're the godfather. You know, you've been in good films like Scarface. You have no reason to do films like this. Mm-hmm. And to finish the film singing about a Dunkachino and rapping into a camera from the same guy that made some of the best gangster films ever made is unexcusable. I don't mind Adam Sandler being a complete and utter I'll chop that. Being an absolute because I'll beep it. At the same time, he can be, because he is a fucking idiot, and he's going to continue being a fucking idiot, like we saw in Click and like we saw in Pixels. He is just a joke. That there's no excuse for him. He's just an absolute, complete and utter joke. So I know what to expect when Adam Sandler film comes out. To see Pacino actually do this, it's not even as bad as De Niro doing Rocky and Bullwinkle. It's an embarrassment. How much did he get paid for this film?
Not enough. I think they paid him.
Did he fuck a kid and they have to pay off a debt? So they're like, you do this film and we will drop all charges.
No, I think they paid him in Dunkin' Donuts, by the sounds of it, because the product placement in this film for Dunkin' Donuts was ridiculous. Every 2 minutes, Dunkin' bloody donuts.
Incidentally, there is something I want to bring up here. Yeah. Right at the end, where he's done the commercial and stuff like that, there's a scene where he's showing Pacino the commercial, and Pacino starts saying, destroy this, make sure no one ever sees this, make sure this doesn't get out. I think that was actually real footage. I think that was Adam Sandler showing Pacino the film, and Pacino's response was, destroy this, burn this, no one's ever allowed to see this.
Yeah, and he wasn't referring to the in film Dunkin' Donuts. He was referring to the full two-hour Jack and Jill movie. Yeah, I'm going to come back to Pacino in a minute. I just want to talk about Sandler for a second. The grand irony of this film for me is this. Adam Sandler, in every single film he's ever been in, overplays. He's nearly at sort of Jim Carrey levels of mugging and funny faces and funny voices. In this film, as Jack, it's the most understated, realistic human performance I've ever seen him give. He feels like a real human as Jack. That's because he put all of his mugging and stupid voices and stupid faces into Jill. And Jill is the worst excesses of anything he's ever done.
Yeah.
And it's like, if Jill wasn't in this film, if this film was just called Jack, I'd be like, wow, Adam Sandler's actually a real human who can act. It's the best I've ever seen Sandler as Jack, but as Jill, he made me want to die.
Because he's so reserved, it's not too bad. And I thought Little Nicky was one of the worst films I'd ever seen. Oh. And that voice in that made me want to completely kill him. In this film, it's another level.
Yeah.
I'm remaining calm right now, I'm just taking some deep breaths. I'm being serious, because he wound me up to the point where I wanted to turn it off. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm not doing this to myself anymore.
You chose it.
I know, but
we always do this to ourselves.
It's like he did with fucking Battlefield Earth. It's just part of the fun. But watching it and listening to that voice and the over the top, and then to fucking have all the audacity in the story to then be the guy playing the girl again as to try and go in the change room to fool it on the date.
What
the fuck are you doing, you stupid prick?
So for those who haven't seen it,
playing a man, not playing a woman, dresses up as
this. Yeah, for those of you who haven't seen it, in the film, Adam Sandler plays both himself, Jack, and his sister, Jill. There's a scene in the film where he's trying to get Al Pacino to go on a date with Jill. Jill doesn't want to go out with Al Pacino. So Jack dresses up as Jill. So this, as Adam has just alluded to, is Sandler playing the male character, pretending to be the female character, who was him as the twin anyway. It's honestly, it's the snake swallowing its tail. I don't know what's happening. I was confused. I thought there was going to be some sort of universal singularity and the world would just implode at that point. I didn't know what was happening.
Halfway through the film, I was hoping the universe would implode.
Yeah.
There's a positive to this film, boys.
No, there's not.
There is.
No.
Until now, Johnny Depp, worst piece of shit he's ever done in his entire life was Tusk.
Yeah.
Right? And I've got this wrote down. Finally, we found something worse. So we were like, what the fuck was he doing this stupid voice? Or why did he work with Kevin Smith in this film?
Yeah.
It's an embarrassment. This is worse for me.
It is, but
Yoga Hoses.
Yoga Hoses is coming. He can take the title back.
Well, we'll all stay tuned for that and a future episode. But at the moment, that's
Adam Sandler and Kevin
Smith.
That's
his lowest moment. So
yeah, why was
Pacino and now him. Who was he sitting by in the basketball scene? I'm trying to remember. He was with some other big celebrity as well.
Oh, I only remember seeing Pacino and Johnny Depp. But the funny thing about...
Sorry, are we basically now saying that Adam Sandler and Kevin Smith are fighting out a heavyweight battle for who can put Johnny Depp in the worst shit film of all time?
Quite possibly, yeah. Stay tuned for the Skippies at the end of the year. Might be a special
He's going to clear that up. He's going to win everything.
I did like that Johnny Depp in that scene was wearing a Justin Bieber t-shirt, which apparently was his own decision, just because he thought it'd be funny. And it was probably the only funny thing in the film.
The only laugh it got.
Pacino. I agree with you. I hate the fact that Pacino is in this. It disgusts me that someone of his caliber would be in this. That said, I thought he was the best thing in it.
Definitely the best.
I thought he was intensely committed because you see, you know, he's playing himself and it shows him on stage in Richard III. And there are some really funny scenes of, in you know,
him shouting
at people whose phones are going off. And he's because he's completely besotted with Jill inexplicably. Mm-hmm. There's a bit where he stops the performance because he thinks Jill's calling him and he's just talking to Jill on the phone in the middle of Richard III on stage. I thought he was really, really good. It disgusts me and annoys me he's in it, but by God, he put his all into it. So I can't really fault him. If you're going to do some shit, at least go, you know, full 100.
One of our MTM Comic Cons, you spoke to John Noble, who said if you are going to do something, you put everything into it. Yeah. And I think Pacino kind of sums that up in this film.
Yeah, John Noble was referring to like toothpaste commercials, though, not working with Adam Sandler. It's a different
Don
thing.
Not working with Adam Sandler playing both Jack and Jill.
Yeah.
That voice, that's going to stay with me forever. And also, fuck you, Katie Holmes. I had a lot of respect for you. Batman Begins is good. Why are you doing this?
Why have you got respect for her?
I liked her in Batman Begins. She's I thought she was good.
She's terrible. That's why they replaced her with Maggie Gyllenhaal.
That's why they stuck her in this. But still, you've got standards. You've got money. You don't need to do this.
What else is Katie Holmes in?
She was in Dawson's Creek.
She was in Dawson's Creek.
Dreadful.
Yeah, and she was in Tom Cruise's bed for a few years. But other than that, nothing.
Yep. She's got a kid with Tom Cruise.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
Isn't it named Siri, like the thing on your phone?
Yeah. I'm surprised he hasn't sued him for that, using their name. But anyway, Adam Sandler's voice is just enough to make me want to kill myself. I can safely say it's his worst film I've ever seen with him in. He's got a few. It's worse than Click for me.
Yowza.
What's the one serious film that he actually did that was it Punch Drunk Love?
He's done two. He's done Punch Drunk Love.
Which was good.
Which was a good film. And he did another film called Rain Over Me, which was with Don Cheadle. And he plays a guy who lost his wife in 9/11.
Shame.
And it's the way he sort of deals with that. And he's brilliant in it. He should have won genuine awards for that.
He can act.
And also, Funny People, the Judd Apatow film. Mm. He's great in that. That's sort of a comedy drama. And he's really good in that as well, and underplays.
And he's good.
He's capable. He's capable. Do you know what the problem with Sandler? It's not that he's incapable. It's that he's fucking lazy. He is lazy. He likes to get his friends together and make shit films just so he can hang out with his buddies. President Paul Blart Mall Cop wasn't in this one, but David Spade was, because David Spade is in all his other fucking films
as
well.
And the other fat twat that I don't like, the one that said that we should be the thing of the fan club, wasn't he in it for like 1 second? The other fat twat from, he was in Pixels, I hate his name, I forgot him.
Josh Gad.
He was in it for about 10 seconds, I'm sure he was.
I didn't see him, he may have been, but I looked away.
You're not
going
to miss
him,
are you?
But he just gets his friends together, he has the same directors, he's got a couple of directors who make all his films, a couple of writers who make all his films, his friends are in all of them.
Is he friends with Jared from Subway?
Apparently he's friends with Jared from Subway, because he was in it, and I don't want to make this into a paedophile special, but he too is a nonce.
Yeah,
a self-admitted one. He was arrested for sleeping with underage prostitutes and having child porn on his computer.
Not allegedly, he actually did.
Well, he's admitted it. Yeah.
In all fairness, we complained obviously about the Hollywood thing, but that's only recently. He may never work in Hollywood again.
I'm pretty
sure he's not going to work in Hollywood again at a creche or otherwise.
Well,
Mark,
that's
just
based on his performance, nothing else.
I don't know what's going on with this film. But do you know what the disappointing thing is? I disagree with you when you say it's the worst Adam Sandler. I mean, that's your opinion, that's fine. I don't think it's his worst film. I found this film...
What's worse? Little Nicky?
Yeah, Little Nicky is significantly
worse. The voice
worse.
On that.
Yeah. This film, to me, it disappointed me in that it wasn't as bad as I wanted it to be. It was just sort of an average comedy. If it wouldn't have been... You know, if his twin sister would have been played by another actor, an actual actress, or a human woman... Mm-hmm. I would have thought, it's just an average, unfunny comedy of which you get dozens a year. It's only the fact that he played the female character himself that makes it atrocious. The rest of the film is just an average to poor comedy film for me.
It made me angry. I fucking hated it. And it just really did make my blood boil. And I just can't put up with shit like this anymore. I'm serious. I hated it.
Well, is that Adam's pick for the rewatch? So.
Do you want to rate it? Because I can't be asked to talk about it. And it actually made me angry, genuinely.
Go on, Ben, what you got?
Oh, God. Yeah, as I say, it's just an averagely bad comedy film. I didn't hate it. It didn't upset me, per se. I'll give it a 4.
The worst thing I've ever seen. I'm doing an Adam. It's 0.
Really?
I'm that offended by it. I fucking hated it. Because I like Pacino.
Yeah.
And you might say he's good in it, but his name shouldn't be on that. On IMDb, right, yeah. He's on it now with this.
And he's soiled forever. Forever unclean.
Don Cacino. Fuck off, your Chino. Right.
Don't know what that means.
See, I'm actually giving it a 2.
Cool.
I think this is bad, but I don't think it's the worst thing we've watched.
Yeah, it's not.
I think Battlefield Earth is a lot worse.
Definitely.
Than this.
Worst film ever. Yeah. Wicker Man.
Yeah, I think The Wicker Man's a lot worse than this as well.
Made me more angry.
I think
Howard
the Duck's worse than this.
Oi.
He's Mark's wearing his Howard the Duck t-shirt.
Oi. It's a good film.
I generally do, I think.
No.
Yeah.
Howard the Duck is worse than this.
Do you know what? I appreciate you giving this a 2, and I'll tell you for why. Because it makes the maths really easy. It means we give it an overall score of 2 out of 10.
Nice. We put this out to social media, and it's quite disappointing. This is what we've had. Lee Teasdale, the weirdest thing I've ever seen. Big pile of shit. Sandler as a woman is more convincing, though, as Pacino as himself.
Oh, I disagree.
At MZorian3D, why would you put this for yourselves? Why? Facebook, Sarah Lazil has put, no chance of me ever watching this film ever again. This is what we pay you for. I'm sorry, but we don't get paid for this podcast.
Hold on.
So I don't know what you mean by that.
Are you paying us?
Is there some bunts involved and I've not been told about this?
Because
if there's cash on the table.
Loads of money.
That's why I've got his new t-shirt.
Have you been skimming off the top?
Yeah.
Where's our cut?
I did actually go back and say we don't get paid, and she went, that makes it even worse. David Dixon has put, the cover, it stares me in my soul and it burns. I can't do it, guys. I can't do it. People are just refusing.
Good.
Sean Butler put, no, not watching it. Alex Smith to sing put, no, guys, not put myself through this shit.
Yep,
people just refusing. People
don't
aren't even getting
them.
On board.
Do not blame them.
They always used to, though.
Yep.
I'm starting to think that now we should probably start watching good films again.
Well.
Adam.
Here goes.
As you two keep doing this and I keep doing this and we keep putting ourselves through these god-awful, awful films.
Yeah.
Comedies that aren't comedies, dramas that aren't dramas, I've decided we need to break it. We need to. No. We just need to stop.
Is he bluffing, Mark? Is
I
he bluffing?
I don't know. I'm looking at his face.
So I'm doing
like...
something we've not done before.
Oh, God.
There are some fantastic documentary films out there.
Yeah?
So I'm going to choose one of them for the rewatch.
Okay.
Paul Blart Mall Cop.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Oh my God.
We're
going
to watch the true to life story of Paul Blart the Mall Cop.
His rise to his Mall Cop status. Yeah.
It was needed, actually, to be fair.
We need a documentary.
Oh, shit.
So next rewatch, Paul Blart Mall Cop.
Christ on a bike.
That movie fortune, so.
Yep.
Yippers.
Yeesh.
We've not been sued yet either, guys, so it's going pretty well. Dennis rung and he said, can he come on? I said, fuck off.
Yeah. In all fairness, with our episodes, if we're not getting sued, we're doing well.
Yeah.
Some of the shit we come out with.
Yeah.
Now, I've actually folded over the topic title, so you guys don't even know what this is about.
Yeah, we don't even know what the overarching topic is.
This overarching topic is quite... given the theme of the episode so far.
Yeah.
Top pedos.
Fits in.
It's not as light as bloody episode, isn't it? Top 10 pedos.
It is actually. It is the top 10 worst Adam Sandler films.
Are you serious?
Top 10 worst.
Worst Adam Sandler.
So where have you found it? Where are you get? What?
This
where
was
is
on
the survey?
A watchmojo.com as voted for by their viewers.
Okay.
So
this is going to be good.
This is a very interesting one. So who wants to go first?
Can I have a toss?
But, and then can we decide who goes first?
Do you know what, Ben? You go first.
Thank you, Mark. Little Nicky.
Little Nicky?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yep.
It is on the list.
Where is it?
Number 7, Ben.
Excellent.
Little Nicky is on the list.
Lovely stuff. Mark?
Click.
Click is on the list.
Oh.
It is number 9.
I actually can't think of 10 Adam Sandler films. This is going to be tough. No using our phones either or iPads. No, it's got to be pure...
Billy Madison.
Not on the list.
Shit the bed.
Bloody hell. Fucking hell. I'm going to go with Wedding Singer.
It's not on the list.
Oh, I can't think of anything.
Jack and Jill.
It's number one on the list.
Hey! Yeah. You win a star prize.
Jack and Jill, number one, the worst.
I don't agree, but is Happy Gilmore some
it's
twat?
Not on the
but
list.
That's good. Yeah.
Quite right.
But you never know, but there's some twat might have voted for it.
Oh, God. What's the one that he was in with Damon Wayans now? Oh, God, where they play cops. Even though I quite like it, actually. I don't think it should be on the list, but I can't remember the goddamn name.
Is he allowed a clue?
I'll give you a clue starting from the bottom.
Go on, then.
He gets married to another man.
Is it when he gets married to Paul Blart Mall, President Paul Blart Mall Cop, who at the time was moonlighting as a fireman?
Yeah.
Yeah, I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry.
It's correct.
Fucking hell. I can't believe we're at the clues already.
I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry.
What am I on? Have I got three? Am I 3-1 up?
Yep, you are 3-1 up.
Fucking hell.
Lovely stuff. Go on, Mark.
Give us a clue, dude.
Would you like a clue on number 8?
Yeah, definitely. Or just a clue in general. I can't even think of any films he's been in. Drunk Punk Love? Punk Drunk Love?
He plays a single man going through divorce.
I think that's all of his films, isn't it?
fuck knows.
It was in 2011.
If he can't guess it, can it come to me?
Yeah.
Oh, do you know it?
I think Big Daddy?
No.
Oh. I'm sure he plays a single man going through a divorce in that.
Can I have Big Daddy anyway?
Well, yeah, he said he's not in the list.
Yeah, but hang on, is that on the list?
No.
Oh, fuck's sake. Is it your turn? I can't think of 10 films with him in.
I'm going to say Anger Management, even though I like the film.
It's not in there.
Good.
My Big Fat Jewish Wedding.
What?
Has he made a film with that? It should be.
What? No.
I'm just guessing films.
You can't just make up films.
Oh, has he not made a film like that?
I don't think so.
Fucking hell.
Give him a clue, Adam.
This is tough. I don't know. I really don't know any films.
Okay, I'll give you a clue for number 6.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's reading stories to his kids.
If he doesn't know it, I do.
He's what?
Reading stories to his kids.
Don't know. Disney film.
Pass it to me.
Ben.
Bedtime stories.
It is bedtime.
Yay! 4-1.
I love that you're proud that you're beating me on a Who Knows the Most Films by Adam Sandler.
Give him another clue. Let's see if he gets it.
Okay, let's go with...
Fucking hell.
Number 5. This is quite an ensemble cast.
Yeah.
And it's had a sequel.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I don't fucking know. Can I just pick Pixels just in case that's there? I want to pick Pixels.
Pixels isn't in there, I'm afraid.
Fucking hell.
The answer to the question you've just asked is Grown Ups.
It is Grown Ups.
5-1. Go on, Mike, you can still do it. You can draw. Give another clue, go on.
Have you seen Grown Ups, by the way?
I've seen Grown Ups and Grown Ups too.
Fucking hell.
Wish I hadn't.
Shouldn't have to.
So number 4 is...
Fuck you, Adam Sandler.
Okay, he plays a hairdresser.
I know it if he doesn't.
Do you really?
Yeah.
The Hairdresser.
No, it's You Don't Mess With The Zohan.
I don't mind defeating this. This is fine.
Give him another clue, see if we can get this one.
Number 3. okay. He plays a deadbeat dad whose son is getting married.
Yeah.
My Big Son's Wedding.
It's not that, and I'm blanking on the title, but it's the one where he co-stars with Andy Samberg, who plays his son.
It is.
It's called something like That, That's My Dad, or some shit like that. I can't remember.
Close.
What it's called. That's My Pa, That's My... Bugger me, why am I blanking on the name?
Do you want to give a shout, Mark?
Just do it, and neither of us get it.
That's My Boy.
That's My Boy.
Oh,
fuck.
That's My Boy, Blue.
You're My Boy, Blue.
So there's two.
I can't win anyway.
Do you want a clue for...
Just
for
pride.
Give me a clue.
Just for some pride.
The film, it's a sequel to a film that's already on the list.
That's My Boy too.
I'm going to go with Grown Ups too.
Well done, man. Fucking hell. And number 8, there's one left.
Yeah, I don't, because I've already given you all the clues for this, I don't think you're going to get it. It's just go with it.
Oh.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Is that the one with Jennifer Aniston?
I believe so, yeah.
Terrible.
So they are the top 10 worst Adam Sandler films.
I think I won 8-1 there, didn't I?
It's pretty that's Kevin Smith not, territory.
It's not a win, really, is
no
it?
No one's a winner here.
No,
though.
We're all losers here.
Fucking hell.
But that means Adam and I have won one apiece.
It does.
On next time round, I'm going to be Games Master, so it's you two.
So it's that basically, Adam could win again, as he did with the first game.
Adam can either take home the prize for Fan Movie Fortunes, or Mark, if you can pull it out of the bag, then we need to come up with some sort of tiebreaker.
I think we do we'll say it now. If I do win, we'll have a live on-the-air podcast, Stone, Paper, Scissor.
Let's bring it back.
I'm loving that.
I like that. Yeah. I might lose deliberately now, just so that happens.
Amazing. Next week, Ben, you're the Games Master. Listener questions time, boys.
Mm-hmm.
Boys.
Boys.
Yes.
Who's boys here?
He is.
Marlene.
First question from Guardian452, which is Rob Horrocks 432. Since you interviewed Matt from Funeral for a Friend in a previous episode, just wanted to gather your thoughts on Funeral for a Friend calling it a day.
I think it's a shame.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Obviously, we were actually guests at the show. We saw them perform and they were still as good as they ever were.
Yeah, big time. Matt was literally bouncing off the walls. Yeah.
So it's a real shame.
And I do mean literally. Yeah. He actually was bouncing back and forth from the walls.
Maybe he's got sore shoulders and he's had to call it a day.
Yeah.
I hope it wasn't us interviewing them that made him want to quit being in the band anymore.
But it might be. He might have gone, we've met from the lads from Skip to the End. It's what I've been aiming for the 15 years I've been in the band. I'm done now.
I think it's a great shame, but you know, if he's not enjoying it, well, that's it. And at the end of the day, I'm looking forward to going in June next year to watch the Casually Dressed played in full. And good luck to whatever he does in the future.
And he's an incredibly smart dude who just seems like whatever he sets his mind to, he'll be great at it. So I wish him success in the future, but I don't think he needs us to wish him luck. He's going to be fine.
And I'm sure what will happen is we'll get him back on in a future episode. Yeah. He's more than up for it. On the theme of bands, what band out of all the bands in the world would you choose to do a soundtrack to a movie that you were the actual filmmaker? Who would you choose?
I would
pick the Deftones because I fucking love them. I want an excuse to hang out with the Deftones and get them to score. But as an actual filmmaker, if I was given that actual role to pick someone, it would probably be Nine Inch Nails just because I know that they would do a good job after
them. But Reznor does that anyway.
That's what I mean. Yeah. So I'd just use him just to...
I think
that'd be cool.
It depends what type of film you're trying to make as well. Like, you wouldn't have Trent Reznor doing a score for a comedy.
No.
An Adam Sandler film. So yeah. No. Jack and Jill 2, scored by Trent Reznor.
With Al Pacino.
Yeah. It's a tough one because sometimes what you want doesn't work out as you'd expect. Like, do you remember the film Jonah Hex?
Mm-hmm.
Very few people do because it was a
bomb. I was going to say, what's that?
Yeah, it was a terrible, terrible film starring Josh Brolin. And Mastodon did the score. And through no fault of their own, there was meddling through other parties. They ended up doing this score. And in fact, the score was the best part of the film, but it was a terrible, terrible film. So it's kind of something they just like to sweep under the rug. So I don't know. I think someone like Tool. I'm not a huge fan of Tool, but they make
good
really
shout.
Atmospheric music.
Yeah.
And I can imagine a Tool soundtrack, a Tool score working well with sort of a dot. I could imagine Tool working with someone like David Fincher, like Nine Inch Nails, like Trent Reznor has.
But the only problem is with Tool is they take about 10 years to do anything, so the film would have to be a long way off.
Yeah.
Maybe for like Star Wars Episode 13 or something. So it'd be honestly, they never do anything. They're well lazy. But fuck it.
Well, I think it's more the fact that they're precise and like to take their time.
They're taking
their
time, but 17 years or something. Fuck me. Come on.
Maynard, James Keenan, you're lazy. Deal with it.
Anything that you want to add?
I've kind of said what I need to say about it. It depends what type of film you're trying to make. You know, I'd love the chance to hang out with someone like Biffy Clyro or Foo Fighters because Dave Grohl, I suppose, is like the nice guy ever.
Yeah.
But like Ben says, you rarely works out as you'd like it to.
You're a big, big fan of Taylor Swift, though, aren't you, Adam? So I'm sure you'd bloody love her to be involved in some way.
Yeah, if I made a film called like 22.
Plus to get the chance to hang out of it would be good. Andy Everett, on your anniversary episode, I noticed you guys revisited your favourite movies. You didn't pick up on the fact of your most hated films. Has anything changed in that?
Yeah, well, yeah. If you listen to the last episode, it did for me.
Yeah.
Historically, my most hated film is XXX, the god-awful Vin Diesel vehicle. But as of last week, my most hated film is Battlefield Earth, which is the worst piece of shit I've ever, ever seen.
I thought you were a fan.
Not so much.
No, I don't really think my hated films are going to change that. I think I generally... I've begun to hate certain actors. and every film they're in.
Yeah.
So.
Mine hasn't changed. It was Matrix Revolutions. It still is. But Jack and Jill's Knocking. Just a little bit. It really did piss me off.
I get the feeling that I'm overly critical on certain films.
Such as?
Well, everything I give a zero to.
That's true, actually. And Mark and I have started to go along those routes now. I remember the first time you gave the old duck egg to a film, and we were like, no, you can't do that. But now we're doing it.
Yeah.
Happy
enough. And I don't want to keep doing it.
Battlefield Earth fully deserved it.
Yeah, as did Wicker Man. So, yeah.
At SEZZ221. For the remainder of 2015, there's not many big films apart from Star Wars. After Star Wars, what's the most excited you've been? Someone asked us this a few weeks ago, and we were all like, I remember, I'm going to quote you on this. Adam, you were Fantastic Four. Mine was Ant-Man. And I think yours was, what was the other one that came out? Fantastic Four, Ant-Man. And I think Terminator, we're saying, was quite big titles.
I don't know. So we're talking about films that are coming up in the next 2016, basically.
No. The next 3 months before Star Wars.
Before Star Wars, well. You've got the Steve Jobs movie, directed by Danny Boyle, written by Aaron Sorkin, starring Fassbender.
That's going to be good.
You've got The Martian, and each successive trailer makes it look better and better. You've got Black Mass coming out, which the reviews haven't been too kind to, but I think Johnny Depp's going to be great in that. Sicario.
I was going to say, you're really looking forward to that.
Sicario looks the real deal. The reviews have been fantastic. Emily Blunt in that, Josh Brolin again. Benicio Del Toro looks like he's in a good film for the first time in a long time. There's a lot to look forward to in the
Crimson
rest of the
Peak.
Year. Crimson Peak, yeah, Del Toro.
Wow,
different Del Toro, not Benicio, not Derek Del Toro. This is the actual, yeah.
Not Derek Toro.
No. So
chatting to him and his wife.
What about you guys? I've only answered that one.
The Martian. I hope will be really good, and I'm also looking forward to Yoga Hosers.
Is that actually out this year?
It might be put back. I don't know. I hope it's
put back to never.
I'd love it. Imagine this: if Kevin Smith looked at the cut and went, "Even I can't put this out. Even I, with my low bar." Can't put this shit out.
It's got the lowest bar in show business.
Yeah, him and Adam Sandler, as we've said. imagine a Kevin Smith film starring Adam Sandler.
Can we get that happening?
Should we work on that? Should we backburner Mac and Me 2 in the Room 2 and work on a film starring Adam Sandler?
Let's put that into year 2's development process. That's on our development slate. I'm not stopping Room 2 at the stage.
I say let's backburn them, but we can't because wheels are in motion, what I'm saying? But we're going to actively add that to our slate of development mental movies.
I think if we can get
Smith and Sandler, the dream team.
If we can get Del Toro on board
yep.
for certain other projects, I'm sure he can handle the catering and stuff on that.
Andrew King on Facebook. Sounds like a footballer. Is there a footballer, Andrew King?
Andy King plays for Leicester City.
There you go. I don't think it's actually him, but...
I hope it is.
Might be.
What's one of the worst movie posters you've ever seen?
I can't really answer that off the top of my head.
Let's bring that back.
Should we bring that back next week?
That would be good. Pick the worst poster you've ever seen.
We're going to do round 3 of our favourite posters awesome. In a little bit. So next week, we'll bring back our worst.
Nice.
I like that.
John Brooks, how long does it take to record and edit an episode? He wants the ins and outs.
The recording. So each episode usually comes out around the hour and a half, hour and three quarters mark. And to be honest, we're pretty slick at what we do now. So I would say it takes about 2 hours to record an episode and then we cut out the chaff. In terms of the editing, Mark, you can tell him all about that.
A long time.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say probably about 5 hours. That's truth. Because what you don't hear, there are lots of little bits that should never be heard by anyone else. And one day I want to release it. When we've quit the podcast and we're all living in mansions and stuff, I think the son will find this one CD of outtakes and then we'll all be in prison.
Well, we just want to put out the director's cut.
We will be in prison, I'm not lying. Sarah Fishwell on Facebook. God, they always want this. Any more updates on the remake of Predator with the Chuckle Brothers? Anything you can say, Ben? I know you've been in meetings a lot this week.
Was it Predator? Was it Rambo?
Oh, sorry, it's Rambo.
Yeah, it's Rambo.
Yes,
yeah,
Rambo.
Yeah. Look.
Did I let the cat out of the bag then?
You know, the Chuckles are busy guys. I'm doing what I can. There are irons in fires. You would not know how often I've been to bloody Rotherham working on this.
Yeah, and sometimes you get to Rotherham and you find out they're doing a show at Yarmouth Pier.
Exactly. Do you know what I mean? Do you know how much panto they do? Getting the schedules working? Christ.
This is genuinely 100% truthful, so it's not like allegedly. This week it was reported in the paper that one of the Chuckle Brothers is about to marry a 25-year-old.
Good on him.
I didn't realise as well, he's about 80.
I think they are sort of late 60s.
I can't believe that. Fair play. And it was a fan he met on social media.
See, I'm not saying there's anything untoward in this because they're both consenting adults, but it is weird to think that she probably watched him when she was like a very small child. And even then, he was an old fella.
Also, to me, too young. But yeah. Yeah, it's not right. I think that's quite a big
age.
It is
right. It's fine. It's legal.
Yeah, but that might delay there with the wedding.
No problem with it at all.
Yeah. I'm thinking the wedding might delay the film.
The wedding is going to delay the film. And he keeps insisting that she needs to be in it as well. But I shouldn't have said that. The lawyers told me not to mention that. Sorry.
And last question. Who picks the music that goes on the episodes? We all do. We try and... Shall I let the guys into a little secret?
Let's do it. Let's get behind the scenes.
Right, this is really... Right. In not phase two, I know you don't like that, year two, the end of every episode will have some music that will then be the main film that we review in the next episode. So if you don't listen to all the episode and you listen to the music at the end, that's a big hint of what the next episode is going to be. Mm-hmm. That's a nice little...
Yeah.
And that will always happen for the whole of year two.
Yeah.
It didn't always happen in year one.
Until we get bored of it and then we'll just drop it.
But there are little secrets as well. Every bit of music that's picked has some relevance. Mm. So for example, Hey Johnny Park by the Foo Fighters... Hey Johnny Park, Jurassic Park, we put it on Jurassic World. It's like that, so nice little game.
There was a run where we put a Deftones track in every episode just because me and Mark love Deftones. And it had no connection whatsoever to anything in the episode.
Yeah, Biffy Clyro Questions and Answers is for listener questions. So there you go, little secret.
Our prize competition is always Red Hot Chili Peppers. Give it away, because we're giving shit away. You know what I mean?
There's lots of little secrets.
This shit ain't accidental. We plan this.
A lot of thought goes into the music, guys.
Yep.
A lot of thought. But that's all the questions. So if you've got any more, bring them back. But as we started in the first episode of year two, we had the tweet of the week. @nerdfy_MCR. Love this. Just drove past Nuneaton today and thought of you. I love that.
Yeah.
That's all you need to do to get tweet of the week. Something that catches our eye.
It's going to make us laugh.
Regular listeners will understand why anything to do with Nuneaton.
Basically, it's the most inbred place you've ever been to.
Yeah.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
Guys, a couple of things we were supposed to bring back. So did you bring a poster? Poster comp.
For round three of the poster competition?
Yep.
Most certainly did.
I'm looking forward to this. I hope we've never got any duplicates. These will be up on Instagram this week and we want you to like them.
Yeah.
I haven't picked anything that's big, so there won't be a Star Wars day or something that can get me the votes.
Can't screw us over.
We'll put it out on Facebook and we'll also put it out on Twitter, and we need you guys to like this to then get us the win. At the moment, I'm 2-0 up. This is a good chance for these guys to get back in there.
Tainted.
And I can't wait for the worst poster comp. That's awesome.
That's going to be cool.
Yeah.
No Adam Sandler. So, Ben, what have you got?
I've gone for, and it's an all-time classic.
Nice.
The Trainspotting poster. It's the poster of the main five characters as if it was a sort of a police lineup.
Yep.
So you've got the five of them standing there posing towards the camera with their names next to each of them. Anyone who knows Trainspotting will know this poster.
Yep.
It's famous.
That's superb.
It's a great poster.
Adam, do you want to go next?
Oh. I've gone for the Batman versus Superman one.
Oh, it's one of the new ones. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
With the Superman, Henry Cavill, and then across the eyes, it's been ripped up. The poster's kind of been ripped apart to show the Batman symbol.
Yeah.
And I love, they did two alternate posters for that. Batman with the Superman logo on, and they both look fantastic.
See, Adam's done a smart play here.
Yeah.
He's done a smart play. See, it's a good poster. It's not as good as my one, but he's more likely to win because he's going to be able to hashtag Batman and hashtag
Superman.
And
I guarantee the trailer will come out next week.
Yeah.
That's the plan.
Adam's played it smart. You know, I've gone with the integrity route, but Adam's played the game well, so I applaud
poster,
him.
It's a good poster, man.
It's a good poster. It's not a great poster.
And it's a great poster.
And finally, a classic, The Exorcist.
Yeah.
It's a great poster. Look at it.
Mine and Adam's are better.
It's iconic. It's a great shot.
I guarantee Mark's just found out some news that Exorcist
it's been remade.
It's going to be announced on the day that the competition goes live.
Yeah, I've picked Star Wars Episode 7 poster. And guys, I don't know if you remember, but last episode mm-hmm. 28, we got asked if you could choose two film directors, filmmakers, to work together on a film.
Yeah.
Who would you choose? And I think we needed a good week and a bit to think about this.
Yeah.
Ben, give it to me.
Well, I'm going to go with that dipshit who directed Battlefield Earth. can't remember his name, shouldn't have to. And I would like to see him work with Kevin Smith. Because I'd like to see, you know, do two wrongs make a right? I'd like to see that. I'd like to see if they could come up with something between them that would buck the fact that both of them are useless cretins who are overrated by anyone who's ever lived.
I will just say at this point, I don't agree with what he says about Kevin Smith. It winds me up when he does this, but I'll let it go. Adam.
As I said last week, Joel and Ethan Coen.
How about picking two that haven't already worked together?
Yes.
Okay. Christopher Nolan and David Fincher.
Whoa.
That'd be quite an interesting
Jesus Christ. That'd film. Be dark, wouldn't it? That'd be some trippy shit.
That'd be cool.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone with John Hughes.
Yeah.
And Cameron Crowe. So Cameron Crowe is one of my favourite filmmakers, but they both put heart and soul into films, and they're both quite similar with the soundtracks, and I'd just like to see how it would work. Imagine like Home Alone with sort of almost famous music.
You could have four if you said the Coen brothers and the Wachowskis.
Siblings, yeah. That would be a That's shower of shit.
Too many cooks.
So guys, thanks for all the questions. We really do appreciate it, and it is you guys that make the episode. So keep them coming on Twitter at STTEpodcast and facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast. And hopefully we'll get loads more to answer on episode 30 in 2 weeks' time.
So that brings us to the end of yet another Skip to the End podcast. It was a good one.
It was very good.
It was nice. It was nice talking about a serious film.
It was, and it was nice to review a film that we actually all bloody loved.
And we all loved, yeah.
I'm just shocked that it's going to be 30 next time round.
It's crazy.
Can we now, and I'm just going to put it out there, can we not have any mention of any pedos on the next episode?
I can't promise that, Mark.
But I just don't want any more.
In all fairness, it depends what happens in the news now.
Yeah, it does. It really does.
Yeah, if it turns out that Matt Damon's been at it, then our review of The Martian is going to take a very different slant.
Yeah.
So next time round, we are going to be reviewing The Martian, which is going to be an excellent film based on the reviews. So, well, I really hope so anyway. We've liked the reviews, we've liked the trailers. I've got high hopes for this, haven't you, lads?
I'm reading the book at the moment, so I bloody hope it's good.
Yeah, Wiggly Scott's going to do a good job with this.
Wiggly Scott always does a great job. And what is going to be our topic? I've picked the topic, haven't I? So we're going to do best quotes, our top three quotes.
That's going to be
movie
good.
Movie quotes of all time.
Interesting one.
Yeah, Adam, what's the rewatch?
It's the documentary film, Paul Blart Mall Cop.
Paul Blart Mall Cop, yeah.
That is rise to becoming one of the best mall cops in America.
And I want to see where he came from, because, so you know, the fact that he's gone from mall cop to president was a huge jump. So what was he before he became a mall cop? Was he like a parking attendant?
Well, he was a fireman, wasn't he? Because he married Adam Sandler.
Yeah, but I think he did that afterwards. I think he was doing was that on the side. I think he was moonlighting as a fireman, you know?
Oh, okay.
I think he was just doing a bit of volunteer.
Well, I imagine the documentary will clear all this up for
him. Well, I think he used to work at KFC and edit it all.
It's quite possible by the looks of it. So, yeah, we've got that. Yeah. What year are we going to be skipping back to, Mark?
The year 2000.
Yeah.
That's going to be, honestly, I've already looked into this, Border Hair. It's fucking awesome. Yeah. There's so much good.
Up to the year 2000.
Won't it be strange when we're all fully grown?
I will not be using that music. I might use Silverchair, the year 2000. That's a good tune.
Yeah, don't give it away.
But yeah, give it away now. We're being dicks.
Nice little sing song to end it.
It's a bit of fun. So what else have we got?
We're going to bring worst competition, worst poster.
We're going to announce who's won round three of the best poster. We're going to bring our worst poster. We're going to give away that camera, which is a hella good prize. And we're also going to give away a load of Elvis. we're not giving away any Elvis.
We're chopping up Elvis's corpse and we're sending it to you.
We're not doing anything with Elvis whatsoever. It's going to be an Everest prize.
And they're bloody good.
That film would have been a lot different.
there would have been more dying on a toilet.
Yeah.
But it's been fun. And it'll be more fun in 2 weeks' time. See you then. There's a star.